This spoiler-filled podcast is recorded live, unscripted, and intended for those over 18. Now prepare your ears for the audio stimulation they've been waiting for all day as we step into
the spoiler room.
Anyway, we're going to go a little lighter now. I want to go with Don's pick, which is... Well, go ahead, Don. Why don't you tell everybody which film you picked?
So, yeah, I kind of went out there with Beach Blanket Bingo.
Yay. Nice!
Yeah, the fourth of the Beach Party movies, in part because I grew up with these movies. These were my mom's things. These were her escape. So it didn't occur to me until much later in life that my mom was incredibly sheltered and naive. yeah. The Beach Party movies were designed to kind of ignore all the political turmoil that was happening in the 60s. And it's very well represented by not having parents or consequences or anything like that. And it all deals with very simple, basic things, you know, boyfriend, except for the last one, actually, How to Stuff a Wild Bikini, which was released in the same year, in which Frankie Avalon was only in the movie for like 6 minutes, and that because he was actually drafted.
Oh.
Yeah, well, not him personally, but...
Right. I didn't see that one. I need to see that. Didn't see that installment.
Yeah, yeah. Actually, that one had been on Netflix for a while. It's available on YouTube currently. Well, but yeah, this one was it's a lot of fun. The Eric Von Zipper character is a hoot. I love the fact that they have the Buster Keaton has a recurring actor coming back to play in Don Rickles. They have Linda Evans in this one. In this one, too, it's Frankie and Dee Dee doing what they do with the gang. And they made five movies in, gosh, I want to say 3 years.
Yeah, it's like 3 or 4 years. I was looking up all of the Beach Blanket movies, the beach movies from William Asher, and it was within a short amount of time. They were successful, too, but they created... Yeah, these five movies in a fairly short amount of time.
Yep. And they're all very lighthearted and frivolous and designed to be completely escapist. And this one has a few things of note. Very fantastical with having a mermaid. And another thing of note is the cinematography was done with Floyd Crosby, who was well known for working with... Our favorite Roger Corman on some of his movies. So yeah.
And Beach Blanket Bingo is about, it's the fourth one. We've got Frankie Annette back and most of the people from the other films back. And in this one, the motorcycle gang led by Eric Von Zipper kidnaps a singing star, Sugarcane, managed by Bullets. I love these names.
Yeah, Paul Lind. Plays Bullets.
Oh my God.
Yeah, Paul Lind plays Bullets.
Paul Lind is classic in this. Who's all seen Beach Blanket Bingo?
Yep.
Oh, yeah. I believe so, yes. They blur together a little.
They really do.
They're so much fun.
And this is one of those, back before there was music television and back before music videos, this was a way to feature talent singing songs that later would actually be on the pop charts. Some of these out of these bikini movies, these beach movies, did get played on the radio, didn't they? Quite a bit, some of them.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, these are like... So, the characters that we have in here, though, we have Frankie and Dee Dee, and then who are played by Frankie Avalon and Annette Funicello, and then in this one, Eric Von Zipper is played by Harvey Lembeck, who played it in all five films, I think. And he's just hilarious. Glenn, what did you think of his character, Eric Von Zipper?
You know, it's been so long since I've seen this. I mean, I've seen it, but I mean,
sure.
I was probably in high school.
Oh, wow. So it's been a while.
Yeah, 35 years. 30, well, no, 30 years. 30 years, yeah.
Paul, did you see this one?
There wasn't enough blood and guts for it for me to for psychological type of things. That was my thing when I was growing up. So.
My dad just loved Annette Funicello, man.
Oh, she yeah. Was.
He would be like, hey, because, you know, when you're your dad and you're a young boy or whatever, dad likes to try to show you what's up or whatever, and he'd be like, hey, man, watch her shake around, man. Check this out. And I think I may have been too young to understand what shake it was, you know, what he was talking about or whatever. But, you know, like, I could see it. You know what I'm saying? Like, she's pretty A1 awesome. I mean, you know.
Yeah, she was.
They're thinking about people from that time. Like, you know, my dad was born in 50. Mm-hmm. Right, so he would have been around the age, maybe I was a little younger or whatever, but you know, when people were seeing that, and kids couldn't get in to see Orgy of the Dead and stuff like that, so they would see Annette in that bikini and be like, that's about what they would get, you know what I mean? That was mm-hmm. enough for them. There's something cool and kind of real neat about that, I think.
Well, the mermaid scene in here was rather risque, wouldn't you say? I mean, Don, would you say that surprised me a bit for the film the way it was? Because on the surface, it definitely feels, you know, kind of got the happy and innocent, but there's some other things going on, I think, in this film.
There's definitely a lot going on. And like I said, it was my mom was always, and there's some people out here who really hold these up as pure and innocent. And when you're really looking at it, it's all about sex, sexuality, exploring sexuality, exploring the relationship between boys and girls. And it's never really clarified the age of these boys and girls, but it is very clear that there's no supervision going on, and they're pretty much allowed to do whatever they want to.
Yeah, they pretty much have free reign. And you do have an interesting group of characters. As I mentioned before with Eric Von Zipper.
Oh, I love him.
As a villain. Scott, why don't you tell me? We just talked about Faster Pussycat Kill Kill, and she could have kicked Eric Von Zipper's butt without even...
Oh, well, I think that's the joke, is that anybody could. He actually gets stunned by, like, magical powers that he somehow possesses but can be used against him more than he can use them against anybody else. This is great. I mean, this is like what the thing about these movies are is you're absolutely right. They are like there's like a lot of sexuality going on here as much as they could get away with without being, you know, picketed, you know, by anybody, you know. But at the same time, you look, it's got this old fashioned, you know, goofy vaudevillian humor to the point that you got the tough, you know, biker, leader, juvenile, delinquent, and he, with the hardcore, like, German name, and he is played by this 40-something-year-old Jewish comedian from Brooklyn named Harvey Lembeck, and he was so great in this part. I whenever I think about these movies, I always, like wind up, like, quoting him, like, yes, I adore her.
I am my ideal, but she is my idol.
Yes, I love him so much. I mean, I just remember, I mean, I've seen, like, about half the Beach Party movies, and I've pretty much loved them all, the ones that I've seen anyway. And, I mean, I just always, that always, like, got me is that these things, yes, they were dealing with sexuality and stuff, but the weird thing was is that they dealt with these new taboos, but they use this old-fashioned humor, and you kind of have this, like, weird summer, eternal summer utopia that never actually existed in real life in movies.
Pure escapism.
And they're wonderful. I love Beach Party. Of the four or five Beach Party movies that I've seen, I think there's, like, about, I mean, if you count Back to the Beach, which I haven't seen, but if you count them all, I think there's, like, about eight or nine of them. There's, I mean, it's like, you know, they're pure escapism, and they're all kind of wonderful in their own way. I do remember I did, like, God, we're going back like about 10 years now, but I did write a review for Horror Express for because I was getting sick and tired of writing about horror all the time. I would try to, like, fudge it as much as I can. So I actually did wind up writing a review for Ghost in the Invisible Bikini.
Oh.
And I actually remember getting an email from the woman who played the villainous Sinestra in that movie. Who said, like, yeah, they weren't really thinking these movies through. she says, like, I think you spent more time writing the review than they wrote the script. And she was very, you know, it was very sweet to get that kind of email from this person who made this movie. Like, I guess at that point it would have been, oh gosh, it must have been like 35 to 40 years beforehand, and it was just sweet, because these movies did represent a time where you could create this weird escapist wonderland and have it be completely sweet and old-fashioned, but it's still kind of also a little bit edgy.
Well, it was kind of edgy, because even here, we've talked about this theme running throughout, and I'm sorry if I sound like a broken record, but it surprised me that even here, you have themes about women and their rights in the world, because at one point you get a scene where Frankie and Annette or Dee Dee are walking along the beach, and he makes a comment about where's a woman's place is in the kitchen. And I'm like, wow. And she's like, excuse me? And they have a little brief, not heavy because of this, the way the whole film is, but it's still addressed even there through Frankie, his thought of where the place the woman is, because he didn't want her to go skydiving.
Yeah, he didn't want her to do the skydive at all.
You know, and here he makes this comment, and I'm like, wow, that actually was not expected out of a film like this. You know what I mean? It just surprised me that even in a light film like this, you had that popping up in there, and it actually comes in throughout too, because you've got, you know, the clashing of the love, or the crushes anyway, with the skydiving couple and Dee Dee and Frankie couple, and how the male and the female of both couples are kind of flirty with each other, and how that is addressed as well. But it doesn't get too heavy. It never gets heavy, man, because somebody pulls out a guitar and starts singing, and suddenly there's 1,800 people around him listening to him sing. And, you know, I love that bit of it.
Well, Dawn, I mean, this is being your pick and all. I mean, because I was thinking this, I watched this again recently, and I was thinking, don't you kind of think that Frankie is sometimes kind of a dick?
Oh, God, yeah.
Totally. Yeah, I mean, just the way he treats sometimes the things he says to Dee Dee, and also sometimes the things, I always felt sorry for the, oh, God, what's his name, the Bonehead.
Yeah.
Bonehead. Man, it's like, they treat him like crap.
Oh, they really do.
And Bonehead, he's portrayed as kind of the simple guy, but he's not, really.
He's a nice guy.
he's the Jughead of the group.
He is, yeah. Well, you complete
know,
with the hat.
There's kind of an Archie vibe going on. You know, old school Archie, anyway.
Yeah.
Oh, it does.
I think part of the kind of dick, you know, kind of the Dick Frankie moves or attitude that he has sometimes, so that Dee Dee can kind of straighten him out, though.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Because she, in those instances, it usually is her going, yeah, you're kind of being a jerk. Why don't you fix that?
and it takes him a while sometimes to get through to his thick skull, but he does figure that out eventually at the end, and everybody's happy because they do another musical number. So
they do. And sometimes they're appropriate, and sometimes they're, I don't know what the hell that thing was that he's saying, but it was really just weird.
Yeah. Beach Blanket Bingo, excellent choice. One of those films that are fun, but yet if you look underneath the surface, there might be more going on than you might think. So I love that pick, and it's been such a long time since I watched that one. It was fun visiting that again, so I'm glad you picked that one, Dawn. You know, especially out of the ones that you had, you know, there's so many good ones to pick from. So, you know, I loved it. I loved seeing the cameos of Don Rickles doing his number. They let him do some stand-up in it. And I don't know if that was scripted. I don't think that was scripted, do you think? I think they just kind of said, okay, Don, here, you got 3 minutes. You can do your shtick.
It seems like that's what he would do, yeah.
Because he's calling Frankie like 43 years old. He's only like 20-something, but when he
it's a very Rickles move, yeah.
Yeah, he insults him, and it's the classic Rickles humor, which...
Dummy and Hockey Puck were probably used liberally at that point as well.
I think Dummy was at one point. I'm not sure about Hockey Puck, but definitely a fun movie, especially with those cameos. And now, if you don't mind, we're going to move on here. I know it's getting a little late. We only got a couple more here. Doc,
yeah.
Why don't you tell us your pick that you pulled from 65?
55. Oh, crap, you scared me for a second.
No, sorry.
Whew. Well, as I pointed out, I've been listening of late more frequently, and I've been hearing the type of movies that get discussed in the spoiler room. I don't get to visit very frequently, so I wanted to make sure I picked something kind of controversial almost. And what's more controversial than comedy? Because comedy is very hit or miss, and music's very hit or miss. So I picked a musical comedy. I picked Help by the Beatles.
And why don't you tell us a little bit about Help?
Certainly. By the Beatles. In brief, a fan sends Ringo a ring. He puts it on. It gets stuck on his hand. Turns out it's the mark of the sacrificial victim for Kali, and he's on the run with the rest of the gang for the rest of the film until they can get this thing off. And then all of a sudden, magically, it falls off his hand, and they put it on the bad guy, and they start chasing him around. The end. And in the meantime, you got 7 really awesome songs and some, you know, other Beatles songs that get reappropriated for the soundtrack and some really weird, silly humor. Because Here's the thing. Because at the time, I'm sure there's a couple of things that struck me today as I watched it again. One was they start out with they're about to sacrifice a girl, which is like, okay, this is a goofy, silly little movie, and someone almost dies in the first few seconds. And then when they first show the Beatles, they're still in black and white. The movie's in color, but, you know, you figure in 1965, most people had seen them on the Ed Sullivan Show. Mm-hmm. They'd seen them in Hard Day's Night, so they only have seen them in black and white. They're probably going, yes, we're going to get to see the Beatles in color. You sons of bitches. Whoa, you know, because they're on a movie screen again. So you get a performance. That is the opening credits. But, and it goes, and it's so bright. It's so colorful. And it kind of, in a lot of ways, I noticed today, it inverts the concept of Hard Day's Night in so much that, you know, it's kind of like in Hard Day's Night, you're just following around. It's supposedly kind of a day in life type, you know, similar to it's a fun documentary-esque, here's how we get through the day sort of thing. And the Beatles, we follow the Beatles, but they're, you know, there's all these relatively normal people that follow them and the weird people that they have to deal with in life. In Help, everybody's weirder than the Beatles. When they finally get to Scotland Yard and the police are ineffectual, they're weird, they're goofy, you know, everything is the famous from him. So you get these, just nobody's, even, they come home at the beginning, when you first get to see them in color into the 4 doors that all lead into one giant, you know, house. And the neighbors are waving at them because they're going, yeah, they're used to this. This is what they expect. And it starts becoming weirdly meta. And You get not only some of the best shot music video type stuff. The You're Gonna Lose That Girl one is the first sequence of the film I'd ever gotten to see. They played it on Night Flight years ago, and I didn't know what it was from at the time. Just the coloring, the way that Ringo's cigarette smoke pervades the room. It's just really a beautiful sequence. It's a beautifully shot sequence. And then it's still not the... It gets weird then, too, because both Paul and Ringo jump to other instruments magically.
Yes,
because that's what they're playing in the song. So it's like all of a sudden it's like, wait, how did Paul get by the piano? Oh, who cares? And really, there's no reason to care, because by that point it's already relatively magical. So it's very much a cartoon.
Mm-hmm. This sounds
in so many ways.
Wow.
Who else here has seen Help besides us?
Me.
And a lot of this, I think, is down to some degree visually, especially because it's Richard Lester directing it again, who had worked with the Goons in the 50s and in the early 60s, and the Goons were comedy at that point in Britain. They influenced everybody. They certainly had this shows their influence on the Beatles. You know, at this time, you figure Beyond the Fringe had already hit in America. Cambridge Circus is there. So John Cleese is in America just before this. He'd been on the Ed Sullivan Show the year before. So you've got British humor is also pervading America along with, and the Beatles already had their music, so they're going, hey, we're going to have fun too. Boom. And it's all over from there. This movie's just so weird in a lot of ways. And you've got cameos from Alfie Bass. You got a cameo from Jeremy Lloyd, who would go on to help co-create some of the best beloved British sitcoms Are You Being Served? He's partially responsible for. Was he in Allo Allo? I forget now. But just some of these long-running shows. Dad's Army, I think. He was involved in Dad's Army, too, which is just giant in Britain. So... who else? Oh, even in that opening sequence where the neighbors are waving to him as they come home, one of them is, for lack of a better expression, the Edith from the British All in the Family. Mm. So you've got, you know, they've got a basis there. They got all these people around them that are being totally weird for them, and they can just walk around and just be funny. And it works in a lot of ways for me. But that's just me. I don't know about you guys.
No, it does work.
It's like the thing, you know, it's like, you know, both this and A Hard Day's Night are both funny, and they're both comedies.
Yeah.
But as wacky as the story was in Hard Day's Night, which also revolved around Ringo, you know, and everything like that with the grandfather, you know,
yes.
You know, turning him against the van. This one turned it was still kind of, you could kind of look at that and see is it more of a, like, you know, it's a slice of life. It's almost documentary humorous. This one is just bizarre. And then they just said, you know what? We're the Beatles. We can do whatever the hell we want. We're the biggest band of all time.
Yeah.
And they shot for the fences with it and just went as bizarre as they could.
And it's such a beautiful film, too. They go to the Bahamas. They go to the Alps. There's so many visuals that just... You go, whoa, okay. And we're going to play a song here in the snow. You know?
Well, just their apartment alone.
I love that.
The apartment you get, part of it is got vending machines.
Yes.
And, you know, there's a organ
that's set into the floor.
Yeah.
There's an organ that pops out of nowhere. You know?
And they do this shtick where Ringo calls the other Beatles, and they're all in the same room, and all of their phones ring.
John.
Because
after Ringo falls out of bed, he wakes up John because he thinks John's pulled him out of bed. And then John calls the other one, sets his alarm, and it goes off, so they wake up and start doing calisthenics.
Yeah. it's so bizarre, but so great. And one-liners in here, too. Like, what are you doing on the floor? I'm tired.
Yeah.
Like, what?
Oh, man. Go ahead.
And the three, like, villainish leads, too. Mm-hmm. You got Leo McKern, who I know mostly as Rumpel the Bailey, but he's, you know, great comedic actor. You got Eleanor Braun, who's fascinating. And then John Bluthel's the other little main character, who then draws it back to the Goons because he worked with Spike Milligan for years doing just weird stuff. The Q series, if you can find it on the internet somewhere, it's like Q5 to 9, or I forget. It's you just kept adding numbers. It's some weird. Some of it doesn't quite work as much as it might have done at the time. But it's all just very low budget. Let's make fun of the BBC, and we're gonna have a little party on screen.
Yeah, with Help, I loved how it was. Was shot and put together. It is like a whole bunch of just little sketch comedy. Andrew, what'd you think of Help?
Oh man, it's got good memories for me, man. Because you know, like we're talking about with Dad watching the Beach Blanket and Bingo. The Help was more. He was a Beatles fan, he was a huge Beatles fan, and I remember like him telling me one time, he's like, "You know how high they were when they were shooting this?" he's just talking about weed, I guess. But like,
yeah.
I had never, you know, obviously, I've never touched drugs or been drunk or anything my whole life, and I just remember hearing that, going like, "Man, that was an interesting generation that you're part of, Dad." I can't hear the movie. I can't hear the music. None of that without thinking about that stuff with him. In terms of film, I enjoy Head, the Monkeys movie.
Yes,
yeah,
that one's bizarre.
Yeah, it's a crazy movie. I mean, it's different, but yet, you know, it's kind of like you were saying, like you expect one thing, but there's actually more going on cinematically than you would think. And I can't help but wonder what it was at the time. You know, you think about now, it's like the One Direction movie. How sure are you that that's not even going to be a narrative feature? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then for something like this, it's just, and Richard Lester, I think, is a great director. You know, he made a lot of cool movies.
Yeah. And it is well directed and well paced and just kind of zany. And again, just kind of like with Beach Blanket Bingo, we've got stars we're featuring because we don't have really another outlet. Nobody's doing music videos yet. This is your precursor to music videos, basically.
Video had existed in the 30s and the 40s too, but it was it would be before a feature, or you could pay. They had like a video Nickelodeon type thing where you pay the quarter, whatever, you could watch. Because I've got a couple of discs from Kino Video where it's, you know, it's like Frank Sinatra and Bing Crosby, Louis Armstrong, stuff like that. And there were little 10-20 minute little shorts where they mostly played music.
Mm-hmm.
Cap Calloway, that one was really good.
But weren't those done kind of more just like a concert?
It's a little more like a concert, yeah. No, you make that point. This is true.
You know, that's what I was trying to say, is that this is more like the stuff in Help is more like your kind of more what we would see later on, you know, like 30 years later, or 20 years later, you know, videos, music videos with a bit of a narrative to them, or doing something other than just showing the performer standing next to a piano or playing the instrument. Wouldn't you say, Glenn, that these kind of are your precursor to those 80s music videos?
Oh, absolutely. Without a doubt. I mean, I wouldn't go as far as to say that those videos wouldn't exist, but they wouldn't have the same feel that they did.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because I mean, the videos in the musical numbers in Help, most of them, there's a little narrative, like the Alps one when they're in the Alps and they're I forgot which song it is that they're doing to it, but they're just doing this kind of wild thing, and then they're in the Bahamas. They do another one. At one point, I think it's Paul is playing a girl like a guitar.
I love that. Because it's just, and she looks like she's having the best time in the world. She's like, Paul McCartney's about to touch me.
So you have that going on, but you actually have kind of an interesting, strong female character here, even in Help, this kind of zany film, in the. Out of these religious guys who want to kill Ringo, you have a female who is actually helping them. And she's kind of the strong role. She shows up in her matching pink outfit with a pink gun, which I just loved. I'm like, wow, her gun even matches her outfit. What the hell? But she saves the guys in a number of cases throughout the film.
She almost has to out of guilt, because this is entirely her fault. This is all her devious plan to save her sister from being sacrificed. So she's the one that sent Ringo the ring, and then she has to go protect him so he doesn't get killed either. It's kind of the plan. So she's the entire motive for whatever story there might well be in there. She's the whole – she's antagonist and protagonist to some degree.
Yes. And it's another comedy right along with Beach Blanket Bingo, and it had that feel of that early 60s comedy, like it's a mad, mad, mad world. Mad world. I might have missed a mad in there. But lots of mad there, where you've got your narrative, you've got that going on, but you know, at the same time, it doesn't necessarily need to be that cohesive, but it can be funny. It's a bunch of skits. It's a bunch of these numbers almost. Because, Don, wouldn't you say Beach Blanket Bingo was kind of like that? Like a series of, I mean, you had the overall arcing story, but it's really made up of these series of smaller stories that could be done as short films by themselves, short skits almost. I mean, wouldn't you say that with Beach Blanket Bingo as well?
Kind of, I guess, yeah. The other movies too as well. So, like I said, some of the songs fit in there real well, and some of them are just thrown in there because.
Right, and Help's got that as well, where some of the songs really fit with the way the narrative played out, and then a couple of them just like, oh, we're gonna play now. It's just like we need to have that harp nearby because at any time Harpo's gonna want to play the harp and. We've got to catch that. I mean, that's the way it felt as far as the way the story goes occasionally, is all of a sudden, boom, where you've got the Beatles playing their music. It's like, oh, okay, we've got a musical number now.
It's been 5 minutes, time for the song.
Yeah.
We've got a soundtrack to sell, which is the next album.
Yeah. So, yeah, Help is a lot of fun. And what is it about the Beatles music? I'm not sure, but it's one of those tunes where you don't get tired of that music. At least I don't. It's not just that it's easy on the ears. Some reason I just liked all that music in there. And, yeah, it's a lot of fun. That film is definitely zany and had a Monkees feel to it. So, though I know the Monkees. Monkees came later, I think, but
yes. Monkees were directly influenced by Help.
Yes, totally, yeah. Totally, and especially just them all living in the same building and all that sort of thing. Just the random, but yeah, Head totally takes it in another step.
Head was kind of their response to say, we can be weirder than that.
Yeah. Well,
Jack Nicholson.
That's Jack Nicholson a lot too. Going, hey, I'm going to make myself. You know, I can do this. You want to see a picture, fellas? Here's my bad Jack Nicholson. Sorry.
And even in that film later on, let's face it, there's a scene in Back to School, Rodney Dangerfield classic, where the kids all go to their dorm room, all three of them open up the doors, they go inside, and it's all one room.
Yep.
And I'm like, wow.
After the remodel, yep.
You can't tell me that didn't have a little touch of Help to it. So.
And that's got Oingo Boingo in it. So there. Awesome. The awesome just keeps flowing.
It does. Excellent choice in there. And I know it's really late for everyone here, and we've got everybody's pick, which is great. I'm just going to jump mine real quick here. And that was Herschel Gordon Lewis's Color Me Blood Red.
Yes!
Now, Dawn made a mention of it, and we'll find out. I want to get her opinion in a minute on this because she watched this just today, I think, right, Dawn?
Just today, yep.
Really?
Today.
Sweet.
Yeah. So basically, we get this artist who is commercial success. He's able to sell his stuff, but he can't find the right color for his paintings until he does find the right color, and that color is the color of human blood. But, you know, you can only cut your fingers so much before you start running lightheaded and can't do your painting with your own blood. So he decides to get the blood from other sources, and we see how that basically plays out. Part of the blood trilogy, am I correct, Doc, on that?
Yeah, that's the third of the quote-unquote blood trilogy.
Blood trilogy, yes.
And get that Blu-ray if you can.
Yes, I
don't have the Blu-ray.
I had the something weird VHS tapes. I had the something weird DVDs, and I have the something weird Blu-ray now that those are all out because it's Herschel.
Yeah. It's Herschel.
I don't listen to movie commentaries. I listen to Herschel's.
Yes,
because they're awesome.
They're the best.
It's all history. It's all, hey, this is what it took to make an exploitation film in the 60s. Oh, my God.
Yeah. and Herschel
and David Freeman. Oh.
Yes, those two were kind of the godfathers of this. And Color Me Blood Red, I picked because it was Herschel Gordon Lewis, 65. And this film is just really wild. And again, another film similar to, you know, Orgy of the Dead, not so much with the nudity, but in effect it's made on a low budget, but it's got a whole lot of heart and seriousness to it, and I love it because, namely, the performance of the main character, Adam Sorg. He's the artist, played by Gordon, Oles Heim. I think I pronounced that right. Probably not. I murder names all the time, but I love his murder. I love his performance in this as the tortured artist. I mean, he played it so to the hilt. It was great. You know, and he starts making his blood paintings, and then he won't sell them. You know, because he's such an artist. He's like, no, I don't want to sell them. They're too personal. And I'm like, dude, really? but this film is definitely just classic Herschel Gordon Lewis. I mean, you got some great characters in here. Your main character is crazy. And for the budget they do it on, it's creepy too on many levels, wouldn't you say, Dawn?
Oh, very, very much so. Yeah.
What did you think about the film when you watched it?
That says a lot.
That sigh says so much.
I love Dawn's sigh. It's always like, okay, here we go.
Bracing for impact.
Okay. So the problem that I had with it is purely. And I feel bad that I couldn't get over it. Blood doesn't stay nice, bright, shiny.
Nope.
Red. It turns into a nasty, nasty, brown. Nasty brown color.
Yeah.
And maybe it's just me being too much my job, but it made me feel bad that I couldn't get over that. And then. You know, there were little things, little continuity things that, in addition to that, just it was absolutely an enjoyable movie, but I need to get over some of these little nitpicky things that were driving me crazy, like the whole the two kids that were making out in front of this in front of his house. And they're like, oh, let's go on these little nifty bicycle things. Yeah. We don't know who they belong to because they couldn't possibly belong to the, you know, house they're parked in front of.
It's the 60s. Personal property is a little loose.
Oh, my God.
Don't be a square, man. Don't be a square.
Yeah, they're very hipster dialogue, too. That's right,
And then the other, I could get over a lot of it, but that was one of the things that just made my brain not work proper. And then the other thing was at the end when she's all, oh, I'll just tie you up so your hands can stay in the right position. And then she's sitting there and she's tied up, untie me. And she's got so much slack, all she needed to do was put her hands together to untie herself. Mm-hmm. And I'm sitting there going, really? Really? Dude, he's not even paying attention to you anymore. He's paying attention to your boyfriend, the stupid one with the gun. Untie yourself. Okay. You know, aside from those things, it was entertaining. Got the point across.
You speak a lot of truth.
Yes. Kate, have you seen Color Me Blood Red?
No, I have not, but
no?
It sounds good.
It's fun. It's very fun.
It is fun.
Yeah, we recently did, well, we did an episode on Blood Feast. So
nice.
I got the ball rolling there.
Well,
yeah.
I'd like it because I loved Blood Feast. So.
Yeah, if you loved Blood Feast, then I think you'd enjoy this one, though it definitely is a different vein. Ah!
No.
Gwen, what about you real quick? Color?
I have not seen this one.
Really?
Wah, wah, wah.
Wow. Cole, have you seen this one?
I haven't seen this one, brother.
Oh, my God. I picked one that a lot of people haven't seen.
I watched it.
Well, Scott, I kind of figured you did. So.
Well, I just saw it today. It's the weird part, though.
Really?
I'm likely done. I had the Blu-ray set of the Blood Trilogy. Mm-hmm. And it's so weird. I don't know why, because I had seen Blood Feast and 2000 Maniacs a million times, but I'd never watched the third in the trilogy, Color Me Blood Red. And, you know, they call it the Blood Trilogy because blood in the title, and it's the ones they did with Friedman, but in actuality, he did about, like, seven gore films throughout until into the 70s.
Yeah.
Lewis always had a thing where, and I think that this is like probably the tamest, well, definitely the tamest of the three,
mm-hmm.
and it's also the most straightforward of the three. But the weird thing about Lewis is that he always did this big thing about, no, filmmaking is a business. It's not an art. I'm not making art here. This is it. But you know what? At the same time, his films always had this weird surreal quality that are only matched by, like, my wildest nightmares. You know? There's always, like, this weird surrealism, like the whole thing with the burning of the painting in the beginning all the stuff like that is... It just creates this weird mood, and even with the low budgetness and the absurdity of the whole thing, again, absurdity popping up tonight, you know, it always like seems so otherworldly that always just affects me like that, you know.
Yeah.
Plus that is that even though this is like probably like the I think this is there's only like one scene where I would really say it's that gross. Out of the thing, and that's when he's kind of bleeding the corpse.
Kind of milking the intestines.
Milking like the intestines.
It's the
only part I could really say is the gross thing, but also, you know, we have people that spend, you know, millions of dollars on these extravagant gore special effects. You can put like a Saw movie in front of me and I won't twitch. But for some reason, whatever Herschel Gordon Lewis did for a few thousand dollars, some of that stuff, like, turns my stuff, like, the Gore Girls, that movie makes me puke.
And it's that movie's ridiculous.
And I've got that on Blu-ray.
So do I.
And it's so cheap, but it
seems
makes
to me
you
puke. Have a poster for that one there,
Yes,
Mark.
I do. I do have a poster, thanks to you, Doc.
You're welcome.
And he wasn't, like, aiming for art, but he achieved it. He wasn't trying to do anything too sophisticated, but he was more effective than the people who were. So I always think that Herschel Gordon Lewis's films are really fascinating in that respect.
I love Herschel
definitely,
so much.
Yeah.
I've got as many of every time they we found out. Oh, I'll buy that. I'll watch that. They're ridiculous. They're awesome. Like you said, they have that weird, I don't really know what's going on, but I'm in. Gruesome Twosome.
Gruesome Twosome opens up with that weird narration.
Because they had to fill time. It came up too short, so they ended like this puppetry thing with mannequin heads just to fill time so it would go as a feature. It's ridiculous. It makes no sense.
And then you've got the Wizard of Gore that'll just like totally like flip your head.
that remake did not do the original justice.
No, the remake.
I didn't even try that.
As much as I love the Suicide Girls, no, the remake, no.
Yeah.
Something weird with the LSD witch and everything, and just, man, that one is just, I got to watch that one again.
It's another one on the list. Have you seen Color Me Blood Red?
But it's going on my list.
Dude. Blood Feast is the movie that, quote-unquote, is so bad it's good of the three. 2000 Maniacs, I think, is the actual film of the three. It just clicks. Everything kind of works.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Color Me Blood Red, as much as I enjoy it, is kind of falls in between. It's clearly Adam Sorg has some anger issues. but it drags a little, but it's still just compelling.
It's
still
creepy.
It's not like, what was his Dracula film? Taste of Blood, maybe that one. Mm-hmm. It's like, well, here's the one where I'm going to actually do a film, and I'm like, man, you should have put some gore in this. It's like two hours, and Dracula barely does anything. It's like, all right, you try.
That's the only horror film of his I don't think I've seen.
It's not awful, but it's long. Yeah, it's one of those things where I went, he tried to go like serious, and I'm like, yeah, this is why you went back to doing the gore films, Herschel, and then. So, yeah, I still watch it, honestly.
Play really well at 75 minutes, you know, basically.
Yeah. And that one is. It is, like, 2 hours long, and it's like, it's the best part, you get to see Herschel in that one doing this horrible accent, so it's for, like, 2 seconds, it's great.
And I will say that...
Definitely watch it.
I will say Color Me Blood Red did seem to have Roger Corman influence from A Bucket of Blood.
I had that thought, too.
So I had that thought. I've got both of them. So we're going to tie it up here. Thank you so much for making this 50th episode so special, guys. I know it's been a long night.
50 and 51.
I thank you so much
for doing this. This has been great talking these films from 50 years ago and how some of them are still relevant today, and also how some of them you can see how they influenced the films that came after them. So let's go down the list real quick, just briefly, where they can find you all at. Cole, go ahead. Why don't you start?
Well, instead of pimping myself out, I just want to say that I took my lady friend to see Spy today. We walked out of the theater. We got in the car, and she said, you know what? Mad Max starts in 15 minutes. You want to go? So I've officially seen Mad Max more than any movie in the theater 14 times, and she also bought me flowers after.
You can find me on
Facebook. If you haven't seen Mad Max in the theater and you have interest, please go so we can have more movies like this. You can find me on Facebook, Cole Meredith. All I do is talk about movies. So if you're not my friend, feel free to friend me if you like movies. Also, Horror Roar, R-O-A-R, if you want to see my art. And Shadows and Lovers Productions, which is a pretty dead page right now, but when the new movies come out, it won't be. So hunt me down on Facebook, man. And
awesome.
Thanks for having me, Mark. This is always an honor. This is a great podcast, and it's a great part of my life. I'm honored to be here.
Well, thanks, Cole. That means a lot. Thank you very much. And Don, how about you? Where can they find you at?
InTheAudience.net.
Hey, all right. And Glenn?
You can find me YouTube, B-Movie Bunker, with Naked Hope Productions, on Facebook, Naked Hope Productions, and the B-Movie Bunker, and follow me on Twitter, at Naked Hobo.
Awesome. And Andrew, go ahead, sir.
Oh, hey, hi, everybody. Remember me? on Amazon On Demand, my feature films Fake Blood, Mondo Gonzo, Pajama Nightmare, and The Underground Cinema, Cinema with an S, are available for rental. Dr. Humpenstein's Erotic Castle, if you want that one, it's DVD only. There's lots of bonus features. You go to gonzorific.com to purchase that. It's dirt cheap. I think it's like $8 or something.
Maybe. Awesome.
Sweet.
Awesome. I definitely put that on my birthday list as I have my birthday coming up soon. So, Kate, what about you? Where can they find you at?
You can find me on my website. It's onlyamovieblog.com. And on the Cinemaphile podcast, Andrew and I do a monthly Cold Core episode. And May's episode was running commentary to Faster Pussycat Kill Kill.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Fantastic. And Paul, what about you, sir?
Before I pimp myself, I just want to say congratulations on your 50th episode.
Thank you.
Yeah. And you can find me at forsakenfilmreviews.wordpress.com.
Awesome. And Scott?
You can find me at movieocrity.com. It's where I post all my reviews, videos, podcasts that I'm on. You can also check out the full web series of Movieocrity at vimeo.com. You can catch the ones that haven't been taken down at YouTube as well. And, Mark, you invited me on these shows, and you keep having me back. I don't know why, but thank you so much. I mean, it means so much to be a part of this wonderful group. So, yeah, also from me, thank you, and congratulations on number 50.
Thank you very much for that, Scott. It's always fun to have you on. And Doc, where can they find you at?
I also will, before I go into that, briefly say thank you for having me. It was a pleasure to meet all you people that I get to hear so frequently as I drive home. a long, long ride. The easiest ways to find me are... I react to movies on Letterboxd.com. You can search for Hombre de Silla. That's Hombrederessilla, the man of the chair. Otherwise, my performance, if you want to try and figure out where I'm going to be in the Milwaukee area, I'm on Facebook as Professor Thomas Tennant at that point. It's been a busy last week. I was a showgirl, a German showgirl, about a week ago. I'm not lying. In a producer's-inspired sketch done to Springtime to Hitler.
Man, you buried the lead there.
Yeah, totally. It's late, man. What can I tell you?
there are like the first thing I would have mentioned.
There are some frightening pictures, I won't lie. You know, the image that we couldn't get out of that's day after that, I was about this time last week, I was still sticky with Stage Blood filming the Gardeners as one of the creatures. Go and support them. I think they're on Indiegogo.
Yeah, I think it's an Indiegogo campaign that it's still going right now.
Good.
I think.
Good. Yeah, go throw them a couple bucks so we can get this thing done. I don't know what the heck's going on in it. I just know I was making noise and chasing people. usually the first week, the first Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday of every month, I'm at Best Place, which is the former Pabst Brewery downtown in Milwaukee, playing with the Shakespeare Raw group. We pick a name out of a hat, and then you go and grab a script, and you start reading. We know which play we're doing, but we don't know what character we're playing until that night. I played Lucius, the one night. So I got to be Emperor Rome on Monday. The next night, I was Lavinia. I got off stage. I was treated rather abusively, had both my hands cut off and my tongue cut out. So it was an interesting night. And then every other month right now, bi-monthly, the first Wednesday of every month at District 14 in the Bayview neighborhood of Milwaukee is the Art Carnival. As far as we know, it's Milwaukee's only burlesque show where you get to draw the performers before the show. So if you have artistic inclinations or you can at least pretend, hey, you know, come and do that part of it. Otherwise, show up for the show and somebody will be doing something at the very least. If I'm not in the show, I'll be smiling at you, taking your money as you walk in. So,
thank you very much for all of that. Always a pleasure to have all of you on here. Doc, glad you could join our fine group of folks. Each one of you guys doing 50 of these, I didn't think I'd get to this number, and it's because you guys, for some reason, keep coming back on the show and help me talk about these films and share this passion that I have for love. And I do mean it, and I thank you guys after every podcast, and I mean it every time that I do appreciate it. I have a little sliver of the internet, and I wouldn't have thought I had this many people interested in talking films with me. So thank you, really, for making this 50 fun, and here's to the next 50. Hopefully still haven't gotten tired of me by then, and hopefully you listeners haven't gotten tired of us by then. Tell your friends, have your friends tell their friends all about the Spoiler Room on iTunes and on specialmarkproductions.com, where you can find all of our episodes archived there. You can find the fun stuff that I do and all the reviews and stuff that I have there. I have links to all these fantastic people's stuff there as well. And tune in next time. We'll have another episode coming up soon, because here on the Spoiler Room, the conversation is fresh, but we do spoil the movies.